I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
King Slime is a production of iHeart Podcasts and Heirloom Media.
Dude, the lines, I just hopped up out that ghost. I've been driving a dead body. I ain't really into nothing, but I spend it like a hobby. I was locked inside the trap. Didn't think about it, but I got out it. Now my cars and clothes exotic. Are those all lines in dropping jewels?
Yes.
Do either of those lines refer to the defendant being truly humble under God?
No.
You know what this song is about? It's about coming from nothing. It's about telling your kids not that you're riding around with a body. It's about telling kids if you live under the circumstances that a gentleman like Mr. Williams did, you may have to kill somebody because they're going to kill you.
I assume they wanted to start strong and felt that he was a strong witness to bat lead off. But if you bat him lead off, you can't bat him clean up and bat him seventh in the order as well.
Your Honor, this is critical to me. They are trying to paint Mr. Williams as a person he is not. This is a good man.
I'm George Chidi.
And I'm Christina Lee.
This is King Slime.
And of course, we are joined here by producer Tommy Andres. Hey, Tommy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me again. And we're also joined by Suri Chata Jimenez, who was a defense attorney on the YSL trial until his client was severed from the case. Cordarius Dorsey, right?
That's correct. Not severed. Dismissed. Charges dropped.
Okay, so what is the difference between severed and dismissed?
Severed, as in many other people that have been severed, that means that on hold. They're in limbo. Their case will go on. So all the multiple people that were severed, either because their attorneys were able to conceive a baby and bring him to life before the trial even is over, or attorneys that had other issues, or they had no attorneys. That's a bigger concern. That should be a big headline. There are multiple people with no attorneys, and it's been over a year and a half now. They still have not been able to appoint attorneys to everybody that's waiting on one. So those people are just going to have to wait and have their trial on another day.
Wow. Okay. Well, see, he's already spitting knowledge. So thank you for joining us, Suri. Now, a little bit about Cordarius Dorsey. We'll just talk about, he was one of the original 28 defendants. And as we talked about, he's no longer part of the RICO indictment. And that's because he was sentenced to a second life sentence, right, for murder?
That's correct. Now, Mr. Dorsey had a case in DeKalb County. And he had been sentenced to life without parole for that case. A jury decided that he was guilty of murder, and the judge gave him the max. And the max is that you will never get out of prison. So that happened before we even started this trial, knowing that they still wanted to go forward against him. While we were on trial, they decided to indict him on another murder where he was a suspect. In that case, in essence, what happened is that he was walking down a shopping center, a sidewalk. Somebody pulled a gun on him. He heard a click, so he turned around and defended himself and did what he had to do to be able to walk away. So the person that initially pulled a gun on him ended up losing his life. A jury determined that he was guilty, and so he was convicted to the same thing, life without parole. At the end of the day, it makes no difference. He was already serving a life without parole sentence. He's not going to go anywhere. The court and the prosecutors did to him absolutely nothing. He still, it doesn't change what his life is going to be. And then the state decided to no longer prosecute him on the RICO cases because Mr. Dorsey had himself on his own filed a demand for a speedy trial. His speedy trial was going to run at the same time that Mr. Williams's was. So by them dismissing his charges, they cannot go forward against him ever again. It's the case is done against him. They claim that it was for judicial economy. I'm going to be a cynic, and I'm going to say that the only reason he was even in the case to begin with is because they wanted to have a convicted murderer sit next to the celebrity. There was no connection at all between Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Williams, other than they happened to be from Atlanta, and they happened to have at one point grown up in the same neighborhood of Cleveland Avenue. Cleveland Avenue, which the DA's office wants to portray as a war zone. You would think it's Gaza over there. You would think that it's the most dangerous part of town. I know there's a great preschool that's a feeder school to a private academy that's just down the street, Woodward Academy right there. There's a lot of, there's a bit of gentrification going on, but there is community. There's people that know each other, that have known each other for generations. Cleveland Avenue is just like East Atlanta or any other neighborhood that has been fully gentrified now. I don't see it as dangerous. I've been there myself many times. But anyway, they wanted to sit a convicted murderer next to Mr. Williams. And I think that after a while, they realized that even though he had an appointed attorney, that appointed attorney had a big mouth and they wanted to get rid of it.
Well, there you go. We brought your big mouth right into the studio today. That was out. So thank you. So in the limited series, we talked about this kind of famous incident, at least it went viral, at least of you having to buy lunch for the entire defense team, which your choice of Magic City Wings said something all on its own. But I want to ask you, We've been curious in here how the defense team functions in a RICO trial. So you've got all these attorneys. At one point you had, well, not 28 because you said some of the defendants never had attorneys and still don't, but some large amount of attorneys. You still have six defendants with attorneys. Do they function as a team or are they sort of operating independently? How does it work?
Well, it is, as in any prosecution where there's co-defendants, everybody is an individual and each man or woman for themselves. Why? Because there's always the potential of a conflict, right? At one point or another, my client or someone else's client might determine it's in my best interest to turn state witness and save myself because it's okay to be selfish. And some people, at least eight people have been, you can say selfish or have been self-preservation because they were facing with, even though you probably didn't do what they're claiming you did. Or if you did something, you've already been convicted for it. There's a handful of people that have already been sentenced and served their time and paid their debt to society for what they did. And then they brought them back and charged them with RICO for the exact same acts that they've already paid their debt to society. So you can sit there in jail in the bedbug Rice Street for now what it's been a year and a month of trial plus the pretrial detention, which was another 4 or 5 months. So you could be there for a year and 6 months waiting for a jury to say, no, it's not right for you to be prosecuted twice for the exact same acts. Or no, they couldn't prove the actual conspiracy or the connection. And to do that, you have to sit in that courtroom and go to Rice Street every day, be woken up at 3 a.m. so you can be transported to the courtroom. Or you can say, yes, YSL is a gang. Yes, they commit crimes. Yes, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You can say those things and you get to go home. So I have nothing negative to say about those young men that went home and are with their families. You saw Mr. Stevens, he's doing great. He's got a CDL. He's got a good job. He's being a productive member of society, as well as many of the other men that were released. And very important point, they're all alive and well. The main concern, the reason that the state wants to close the courtroom and get rid of these cameras is because of the danger to their potential witnesses. Well, a snitch, if somebody's been labeled a snitch, is the person with most risk, and nothing, absolutely nothing has happened to them for a year and a month because there is no danger to them. They're just living their lives. But going back to the original question, sorry, I went on a tangent. Everybody is fighting for themselves, but at the same time, we got to be smart about it. We're going against the state, a party that has unlimited resources. They can do whatever they want. They can subpoena, fly in, put in hotels, 700 people if they want to. And we have limited time, limited scope. We have our own practices. So at any time, if we can help each other, we will. There was not an official agreement, but if Mr. Steele is up there arguing something and I see case law that I think is on point, I'll text him real quick. Same thing with him. I got emails were like, hey, you might want to look into this. Or when I was reviewing evidence, your client's name came up on this. Why? Because it just makes sense to share it because we are a united front to fight the state because the state has way more power than any of us individually.
I would like to note just while we are taping this at this very moment, there is a hearing in that courtroom about banning cameras from the courtroom. Our attorney is going to be arguing against that, even though we are not.
We already won that case, basically.
So in order to get into the courtroom, like we had to fight legally in order to be physically present in the courtroom. The prosecution, as you say, believes that there's a danger by having cameras. I think that is spurious nonsense. Our attorney is representing us in this regard for free, even though we're a podcast that doesn't rely on video cameras. And there's a, like every other media organization that's covering this is speaking against this today. I honestly don't think that it's going to happen. I expect Judge Glanville to rule against that idea. But it goes to this broader thing of what are they doing? Like, why is it that they don't want cameras in that courtroom? Because I don't think it's about witness intimidation. I don't think that's what's going on.
What do you think is going on, George?
Yeah. I think that the continuing coverage of this is not reflecting them in the best light in their own views, and that they know that if they can shut Law and Crime's camera off, Law and Crime is going to stop covering this. And everybody essentially is going to stop talking about it as much. And I sense that's what's going on. Now, they're going to yell at me when I said that. But I mean, what else am I supposed to conclude?
I mean, it's hard not to draw that conclusion. I was thinking, what about you, Christina? What do you think?
Of
the courtroom not having cameras in it. I mean, do you think that there's a motivation behind that from the prosecution that is not what they're saying it is?
I think so, certainly. I think limiting access therefore limits public opinion on this trial to begin with. And I am very struck by just how many people are tuning into this every single day. People who might not all the ways have the opportunity or therefore the bandwidth to even go into that courtroom. I think journalists included, honestly, because court reporters, just like teachers, they all need a raise because covering this stuff day in and day out, especially at the speed at which this trial is happening, I'm not an expert, but I feel like it is taking a long time. I think it's like super, super important. You can't help but to wonder about like what their motivations might be if they're so concerned about prosecution witnesses. Why not also be concerned for people who might have been labeled as a quote unquote snitch? Like, therefore, everybody's in danger, right? So I'm not sure.
Yeah. And why make that decision now? That's the, you know, has the trial's been televised for a year and a half?
Indeed.
You know,
I was at the Capitol yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was looking at some legislation which will affect Fulton County's jail, I might add. Oil lobbyist, a natural gas lobbyist at random grabs me and says, George, I love your King Slime podcast. I listen to it all the time. And he is effusive with these other like straight-laced, like Brooks Brothers dressed lobbyist guys. Like, you have to listen to this podcast. I mean, you're right. Like, there is there's a lot of interest out there in places you wouldn't expect, like for interest in the trial and honestly interest in what we're doing with it.
That was my dad, by the way.
let me tell you what I was at the Capitol for, because it goes to the question I'm about to ask. Yesterday, the Georgia State Senate passed a bill that will increase the number of crimes for which you must pay cash in order to get out on bond. And it also essentially outlaws bail funds.
Wow. Like,
bail funds are an element of the terrorism prosecution going on with Cop City.
I was about to say. Mm-hmm.
Three of the people who are charged because they were, in part, because they were apparently misusing bail fund money for things that the state believes was in support of terrorism.
Yeah, let's just remind our listeners outside of Atlanta. So 61 people have been indicted for protesting against this police training facility that's being built on the southeast side of Atlanta.
Correct.
Right? And so this is another big RICO case that's coming down the pipeline in Fulton County.
So Fulton County Jail has had deaths, 15 last year, 10 last year, 15 the year before, and one a couple of weeks ago. It is widely understood to be a very dangerous jail. And this is the jail that most of the people in the YSL case are being held in. We had an episode about this earlier in the series. At what point do you believe that the jail conditions are, I'm asking Kachata, at what point do you believe that the jail conditions are so dangerous that it becomes an Eighth Amendment violation and a means of coercion that is constitutionally improper? And how do you actually get to a point where, like, you could start looking at jail releases because of the constitutional question?
Hopefully the federal investigation will get there. But at what point? I'm going to say back in the 1990s, back when this jail started to be overcrowded. It's just like anything else. If you go to a hotel and they'll tell you we have 1,000 rooms, and you're like, okay, well, how many rooms are occupied? And they say 1,000. And you're like, okay, let me get another room. And they're like, okay, cool, you can come on in. Bring 1,000 more people in there. Even though we're already at capacity, let's double capacity because we can continue to get money. A hotel wouldn't be able to do that. Nowhere can do it. You can't go to a restaurant and have more people than it's built for because the fire department is going to shut you down. At what point will somebody shut down this jail because it's overcrowded? And it's not only overcrowded with murderers and felons and rapists. There are people there that have been sitting there for months on misdemeanors. Misdemeanors because they want to change laws and they want to make it that you can't get a signature bond in certain cases. You must pay cash bail. No one can help you with the bail. So what they want is they want to keep their beds in their hotel full and keep collecting money from wherever that money is coming. That's the real concern. And I hope that the federal government does the right thing. And I hope that some people get prosecuted for what they are doing. That's what they really should be looking into instead of adding more. Because the solution is always, well, just give us more money and we'll build more beds. And that's not a proper solution. There are people in there that are mentally ill, should be cared for. There are people in there that are there because they're too poor to post a bond. And that's where the bail funds come in. I cannot talk about the Cop City stuff because there's an gag order there. But I will talk about bail funds in a sense that coming around Christmas, celebrities, Mr. Williams has done it. I think most rappers in Atlanta have done it. They go and they bail people out. Mm-hmm. They get some money and they're like, you know what? For Christmas, we're going to post your bond and you get to go home. Why? Because you're only there because you're broke. Because a judge has already determined that you are not a risk, that you are entitled to bond and you should be allowed to come out if you have money. If you don't have money, survive in there.
We'll be back after the break.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We should probably talk about what's happened in court over the last...
Well, I mean, I was just about to say is that as YSL defendants are being held in Fulton County Jail, they're expecting to wait even longer just because of the sheer amount of evidence that prosecution has, right? We're talking terabytes, Tommy?
Terabytes, yeah. We've been wondering this. 700 witnesses on the witness list, terabytes of information on the hard drive that has the discovery on it. And we were sort of wondering what the strategy maybe from prosecutors is of just, it feels overwhelming, certainly to us who are following the case, but I wonder if that's a strategy to just be like, look how much stuff we have.
I'm going to say, I see it as two ways, and both of them are cynical. It's either they have bad faith and they're dumping discovery that is useless. One of the motions that I filed right before my case was dismissed, funny enough, never got to heard on my motion. It was that on the latest drop, on the latest dump of discovery, which is about a terabyte and a half, as I'm going through it, as I'm going through the files, and as everybody has seen this in your computer, you open the hard drive, and then you open a file and a file and a file and a file. There's just a down menu to get to something. Going into at least four or five submenus, I find a police report. I don't remember the exact date, but I think it was back from 2016. So not recent, because the rules say if the DA's office or the law enforcement doesn't have it, they can't turn it over, obviously. They only have to turn over stuff that they have, either them or law enforcement in their possession. But this was a 2016 case that had a file stamp of received by the DA's office. Not even like they can't say, oh, the officer didn't turn it over to us. No, it had a damn stamp from the complaint room that they had received it. And the file name was Do Not Serve Yet. That is absolutely horrible. That is them hiding discovery.
Wow.
They gave us 700 witnesses. They gave us all the terabytes, but this stuff that they had, they even labeled it, do not serve yet. And the judge did absolutely nothing about it because I never got to argue my motion. My case was dismissed shortly after I filed that motion. But so either they're dumping discovery that's irrelevant and hiding the important stuff within it, like on a civil case when you're going against a big multinational corporation and you're just a small guy, like, okay, here, go through these terabytes. Good luck finding what you need, which is improper. Or they have no idea what the hell they're doing. They don't even know. They just listed 700 people because they're on the police reports, but they haven't talked to them. They don't know what they're going to say. They just put it there in case they want to call them, but they don't even know their case themselves. If you've been investigating this case for over 10 years, right? Over 10 years, shouldn't it be a very clean, crisp outline like the Trump case? The case against MAGA is pretty straightforward. Say whatever you want to say about whoever's running the prosecution in that case. That man is organized. They know what they want. They know the evidence they're going to present. In the YSL case, like, we don't know. We'll go with it as it goes. And it's either incompetence or willful hiding of evidence.
Well, and that going all over the place is something we want to talk about. So there's this talk about coming back to Mark Belknap now, one of the detectives, the detective who literally let off on the witness stand.
I mean, I don't know what to make of this. And George, I'd be curious to hear from you too, whether you're even surprised to see Detective Belknap again, or at least like the notion to see him again. But essentially, like, what happened over the past couple of days or so is that prosecution is like, look, we want to bring back Detective Belknap because there are some social media posts concerning Christian Eppinger, you know, trading MCs for bees, you know, photos of weapons and things like that. And we need Detective Belknap to basically outline how all this is in furtherance of the conspiracy, you know, demonstrating his gang affiliation.
Eppinger, by the way, no longer part of the RICO trial, and also was the one who shot the police officer, or was convicted of shooting a police officer.
Right.
I don't think he was actually shot. I think he was shot. I don't remember.
Oh, no. He was shot multiple times.
Yeah, the police officer was shot six times.
Six times, yep.
Okay. So they want to bring back Detective Belknap to discuss these social media posts. And then there is some conversation that I struggle to wrap my mind around, which is making sure to distinguish Detective Belknap as a fact witness versus like an expert witness. And then there was like this, I guess, some fiery commentary from Max Shard, where he's basically arguing that by reintroducing Detective Belknap as a witness, the jury is going to take for granted his expertise rather than trying to weigh it against like everything else that they're hearing.
This case is music. In some ways, it's like a chorus. The state wants to keep calling this expert to sit in front of this jury, very close to this jury, and repeat their expert testimony as a with all his training and all his accolades again and again and again and again. And there's a reason why chorus exists in a song. It's catchy. It sticks with you. And that's the repeated testimony that they want to bring in again and again and again in front of this jury to repeat the same things. Your Honor, there's an extensive PowerPoint that talked about Rock Crew, that talked about Bloods, that talked about sex, money, murder, that talked about colors and red and bees. And yes, Mr. Stevens testified to what he testified to, but Detective Belknap already testified as an expert about what a B stands for and what Red stands for and Rock Crew and where Rock Crew's from. So there's no need to retread that information and go over it again and again and again.
So what do we think is at the heart of Max Shard's concerns there?
There are restrictions as to when you you bring in evidence. There is an objection. The objection will be bolstering. He is bolstering his own testimony. He came in before, said something as an expert. And without getting too much into the legal part of it, because there are special ways when there's a dual purpose witness, you are an expert and a fact witness, there's a limiting instruction. When you listen into this part of it, you're going to take this testimony for whatever. And then this other testimony, it'll be for facts, because an expert is at a higher level. They're there to tell the jury something that a layperson would not be able to understand. When in their theory, let's put in my former prosecutor hat on, the people, when they look at social media posts and somebody changes the C's for, Christian is Briss.
Oh, B. Briss,
yeah.
Right?
So instead of calling himself Christian Eppinger, he goes by Briss, because Crips, you might just think, oh, he likes bees better, but Crips are the natural enemy of the Bloods. Crips are blue, so they're Democrats, and Bloods are red, so they're Republicans, so they don't like each other. They hate each other. So just like Republicans would change D's for R's, the Bloods would change C's for B's, right? A normal person wouldn't know that, so you need an expert to tell you that. Cool. He came in. He said it. He started the trial. He was present as an expert and explained that to give context to all the other evidence that's going to come in. Next, if you want to bring him back as a fact witness, talk about what you saw. What did you see? You saw that you saw a post that you're the one that took down from the subpoena, and you're going to present it because you're the foundation witness. Then that's it. Shut up. Don't say nothing else, because you've already testified as an expert. We don't need you to bring back your expertise. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to bring him back multiple times. What is it, two or three times they want to bring him back? Because in their order of their case, they claim to have an order, even though they were ordered to give us an outline and they never did. They claim to know what case they're presenting. And when they bring it, he's going to continue to say, and me as an expert, I know that B's get changed for C's because I don't know why. So that is improper, because that is bolstering his own testimony. It is also cumulative. That's another objection, cumulative. Sadly, it seems that objections, legitimate objections, are ignored when they come from the defense, but made up objections when they come from the state, they always change the court's mind, which I guess we're going to talk about that Jules song later on, which is just ridiculous. That when the reason this case is taking years is because when the court rules something, we, as a defense attorneys, we might, bicker a little bit, but at the point we move on. You win some, you lose some. This is the trial is war. You win some battles, you lose some, you move on to the next one. The state does not understand that no means no. When the court says no, they come back. They come back later. They come back a week later. They come back a month later, and they keep whining and whining and whining until the court eventually, just like when you're dealing with a toddler at the grocery store, throwing a tantrum, like, okay, yes, you can have that gum. That's what it comes down to.
More on the way. Stay with us.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's in treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of dragging things out, this is one of the things we were going to talk about, which is Trontavious Stevens. We were a little worried that we were going to be behind with this episode because we put our episodes out a couple of days later, but Trontavious Stevens still was on the stand, recently with talking about this truly humble under God thing. Love is continuing to push him on whether truly humble God is actually the acronym for thug. So I want to open this back up to Christina, let's start with you, just because this is kind of in your wheelhouse. You've been following this particular issue pretty closely. What do you think about this continuing to swirl around?
I mean, so just to bring people back up to speed over the course of like 5 days worth of like actual like court testimony, right? Basically, prosecution is saying, hey, look, Brian Steele, you introduced this idea of Young Thug being truly humble under God as like the moniker for Young Thug, right? Let's go and test that a little bit. So there has been lots of conversation and cross-examination about like, okay, well, if Young Thug says he's truly humble under God, in what ways has he actually demonstrated that? Let's go through his catalog. And so prosecution is asking Trontavious Stevens, what songs can you recall in which Young Thug demonstrates that he's truly humble under God? Trontavious Stevens offers this example, Dropping Jewels, which is off of Young Thug's most recent solo album, Punk. And so, as a follow-up to that, DA Adrian Love proceeds to quote lyrics from the song back at Trontavious Stevens and asks, like, da-da-da-da-da-da, is this Young Thug acting truly humble under God? Is this Young Thug acting truly humble under God? So on and so forth.
In Dropping Jewels, does defendant Williams say, I told my daughter, keep one in the head. She ain't got a pocket. I told my son, if he wanted to live, he might catch a body. I told my son, he ain't a cheerleader, but he might gotta catch a body. His driver named Joe, but he still can't do it sloppy. Are those all lines in Dropping Jewels as well?
Yes.
Do either one of those lines refer to the defendant being truly humble under God?
Question, cause speculation.
Overruled.
No.
All right.
And so the debate continues to evolve in that Brian Steele objects and says, hey, listen, this recitation, this dramatic reading of the song is not indicative of how the song is performed, its overall sentiment, so on and so forth. Let me give you the NPR Tiny Desk premiere, actually, of this song. He did premiere it live before the song actually appeared on the album. And then there was even conversation about, well, are they even allowed to present this song, right? Like, or this particular performance of the song, right? There were some concerns over whether the NPR logo should be shown in the video. There was concerns about, like, whether this was the truest version of the song possible.
The state has no objection to the official audio for the song being played for the jury, but not an NPR concert version where, you know, Mr. Williams can ad-lib, Mr. Williams can say, leave out things. And we would object to the NPR logo being shown. All of that.
The state asks question after question and lyric after lyric, not entirely. And I want to play the whole version, and I should not be handcuffed by the state saying specious things like they're not the identical versions or it's not the official version. I am playing what Jeffrey Williams said out of his own mouth live before this jury. They can see it and it's more audible.
And as I'm like watching the days of conversation, I kept thinking like this is just going back to lyrics being used to demonstrate a criminal mindset. The entire time I kept thinking, okay, if we're thinking about how even folks generally agree that lyrics should be used in a trial like this, none of this is actually speaking to like an overt crime. We are still talking about Young Thug's supposed character. That's what this debate is about. But I'd be curious to hear what you guys think.
No, that's the concern. The lyrics, to me, I think this is one of the first instances that show that there's going to be a reversal. The Court of Appeals is going to come back and say, this was improper. You should have never prevented Mr. Williams through his attorney to give context to what this state elicited. You can't just come in there, hey, let me play you a song by my client where he talks about God and he's a great guy. Talks about his upbringing and it's a catchy song. No, no, no. I want to play it because they brought it up. It is rule of completeness. It is very simple. It's not that complex. I haven't been an attorney for that long, not as long as Brian or Bruce or all the other heavy hitters in that trial. But I know that when the state uses something, a video or an audio or something out of context, we can put it in context. And then the jury decides. Yeah, well, you should just be a slick attorney trying to trick us. But no, we heard what we heard. And the words say what they say. But the reality is that, as Mr. Steele said it, the inflection matters and the context matters. That's why rule of completeness allows you that when they want to use something, I can put it in context. And saying that this is not the right witness, you have to wait until later. That's ridiculous because the witness just spoke about something. The state impeached their own witness with lyrics. So now let's go back because we're talking about it right now.
The state of Georgia said, this is what Mr. Williams said. I'm saying actually what he said was this, and I'm putting in the completion of the story. You know what this song is about? It's about coming from nothing. It's about telling your kids, not that you're riding around with a body. It's about telling your kids, if you live under the circumstances that a gentleman like Mr. Williams did, you may have to kill somebody because they're going to kill you. It's self-defense. The state of Georgia wrapped all that up in little lyrics and misconstrued what they are. I have every right. I need to put this in. And it's not good enough to say later, Judge, this trial, And I have no clue. I've never been in a case like this. This trial may go on till Super Bowl next year. I don't want to do it in 7 months. It is right now, and I should have the authority to do it, Your Honor.
That song talks about how where he comes from, sometimes to survive, you might have to pull the trigger. You might have to kill somebody so they don't kill you. He's not saying go out there and kill everybody, but he's saying, even though we live in America, the way that we've been treated, the way that we've been segregated into neighborhoods that no one cares about, sometimes you're going to have to defend yourself because you can't trust the police. That is the theme from the opening statements. The distrust of the police when you grow up in these circumstances is there, and you have to help yourself. Nobody is saying that that song shows that he's pushing YSL, that he's telling, giving orders, that he, there's other songs that are problematic, you know, talking about very specifically about a murder that just happened, and there's details. So yeah, that's probably very relevant. And again, you put it in context with an expert of hip hop that says in this genre of music, artists talk about things that are happening in their neighborhood. Doesn't mean they did it. But, and the jury decides. You say the words as a prosecutor, you read them with your inflection, and then I play it. Not allowing them to play that is I think it's a big mistake and might bring the case back. And this is what I think that the state knows they're wrong, but they don't care. They know they're going to get reversed, but they don't care because the reality is that if Mr. Williams is convicted along with his other co-defendants, he will be sitting in prison while they appeal the case. Even if the case is reversed, it's going to take years for the transcript to be typed out, sent up to the Court of Appeals, for that to be litigated, then sent up to the Supreme Court, because whether Mr. Williams and his co-defendants win the appeal or lose it, then the state is going to appeal the Court of Appeals decision, and that will take years. So even if all of this gets thrown out because the state keeps doing improper things they shouldn't be doing and they know they shouldn't be doing, Mr. Williams is going to be sitting in prison waiting for the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court to do the right thing. And that is terrible. That is absolutely terrible. You should prosecute a case with the evidence you have, and you shouldn't be pushing the boundaries. You shouldn't be crossing that line when you know you're wrong. Rule of completeness is very clear. You want to use the lyrics, then you're opening yourself up to the jury listening to the song in the way that it was meant to be delivered. It's just that simple. So I'm very disappointed at the prosecution in this particular instance.
One of the things I find that's really interesting about this is how it swirls around this NPR logo being on the video.
I would ask that Mr. Steele not be allowed to tell the jury or orient the witness by saying that it's an NPR tiny desk video.
I would agree with that, Mr. Steele.
And that...
Objection, sure, over your objection. Over your objection, yes, sir.
The state of Georgia, Your Honor, put in
so much character evidence over my objection. Now they're saying we don't want NPR because it's somehow, I don't really know what's wrong with NPR or what's positive with NPR.
Like over and over, Adrian Love is basically arguing that we don't want the NPR logo on this video. And what that obviously says, I mean, is we don't want it to look like white people approve of this. I mean, right? Like that's that to me when I'm watching that, it's like that's what an NPR logo says. Like this is she says it's a mellowed down performance or whatever, but really she's arguing about the NPR logo. And they actually won. They're going to have to take the NPR bug off of this logo. And I just wonder what you think about that.
I mean, again, if it was a BET logo, I don't think they'd be making that argument. I am still struck by the fact that we have spent days in court arguing over this.
A song that's not even listed in the indictment.
Exactly. This idea that, I mean, and the underlying question about like the truly humble under God thing, like is for evidentiary purposes completely irrelevant. Like, I mean, stop me if I'm wrong here. Like the fundamental evidentiary question is when Young Thug rented a car on behalf of Lil Woody, did he know that car was going to be used in a drive-by? Like, I mean, it's a very plain evidence question. Like, they found drugs and guns at his house when he was arrested. Can they prove they were his or that he was in possession of that? So, like, that's a very straightforward legal evidentiary question. Whether or not he is truly humble under God should not make a difference about whether or not he's guilty of an actual crime. But here we are spending days at this. And this is why I'm asking this question, because it seems like, and stop me if I'm wrong, but both the prosecution and the defense seem to be pulling at these threads for hours and days and weeks at times, lengthening the trial. And the jurors in that room, and this is why it's important that we be in that room, are rolling their eyes, and they're clearly uncomfortable with all of this stuff.
If they're there, if they haven't been dismissed for a two-hour lunch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Who benefits from a trial going this long in this way? That's what I'd like to ask you.
The state will benefit any time a trial is long because people don't want to be there. As much as I wish people had a respect for the privilege and the honor of being a member of a jury and having somebody's life or somebody's finances in your hands and making the right decision, people don't want to be there. They want to be in and out. They'll try to find an excuse to get out of it. So if you're tired of being there, if you've been there for a year and a half and you want to go to your life, to your home, to your career, to your dying parents or all the life events you're missing, when somebody is arguing with you about whether or not the evidence is there to prove that somebody's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, maybe you had some points to say, no, I don't think they proved the case. But eventually, you're like, you know what, just whatever. They probably did something wrong. Let's just say they're guilty and let's go home. Because a lengthy trial will always go against the defense. I don't see it any other way because people just want to get out of there. And truly humble under God is just something that Mr. Steele brought up in opening hasn't even been presented as evidence, but it goes to show that they don't have a case because they're just trying to. This is a middle school argument. Oh no, she said this. No, you said this. No, you said this. Where is the evidence? Because I mean, Doug is going to be an acronym for many things. It means different things to different people. Going back to it, what does this have to do with the charges that you have against him? Whether or not he believes in God. Why don't we get into whether or not God exists? Let's do that. Let's bring some experts. I mean, we should do that.
I want
right?
that argument. Right? Like, just know that.
It goes to show that they don't know their case. They're going at it as a day by day basis, and they're. If anything, maybe this was the genius of Mr. Steele, get him distracted from the other pieces of evidence that are hurtful because they spend more time on their. The God thing than anything else.
Right. I mean, there were actual other overt acts that, like, arrests that were talked about, but relatively speaking, there was so much more bandwidth that was dedicated toward this argument over whether Young Thug is truly humble under God or not. Because other than that, when you're talking about, like, you know, Young Thug and Gunna being arrested and where they found drugs and guns and all that type of stuff, a lot of times it's like they're just recounting what already happened. And, you know, so oftentimes they're saying, well, that also was like however many years ago. So this is going to be brief. I'm going to have to, you know, dust the cobwebs off in my collective memory. But relatively speaking, there's been so little discussion about actual overt acts related to this indictment than this whole character-based debate, which is driving me crazy a little bit.
We'll be back after the break.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's in treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have to wonder what the loss of Lizzie Rosenwasser and Don Geary early in the case meant for
attorneys.
Yeah. So two prosecutors, Don Geary, who apparently had been working on this thing for nearly 10 years.
He's the one, by the way, who says he's the king slime in our show.
That yes. would be the one. Like late in 2022, he quit the office. He quit the Fulton County District Attorney's office. He's now a prosecutor in Gwinnett County. And a few months later, Elizabeth Rosenwasser, who was a well-respected attorney in that office, went back to the attorney general's office to go work as an assistant attorney general in their major crimes unit. And so two of the big heavy hitters who had been gearing up for this trial are gone. And that's why Adrian Love is the chief prosecutor on this case. I have to wonder whether or not she was fully prepared for this.
It's a hell of a task to step into, well, I will say.
Let's put it this way. When you are a public servant, which prosecutors are, They don't get paid much. The main thing that the reason we do that job when I was a prosecutor, for the trial experience and to learn how to be a great attorney. And there's amazing attorneys that are prosecutors or former prosecutors. But you don't just switch jobs willy-nilly, because they didn't go into private practice and like, okay, she left the DA's office because she got hired by King & Spalding for seven figures. No, she went just across the street to the AG's office and is probably working on many very important cases, but not one of the most important cases in Georgia history. So why would you leave that? Same with Mr. Geer. He is a career prosecutor. I think he did defense for a little bit with his daughter, and then he went right back to prosecution because that is his calling, and he's an amazing prosecutor. He's the one that prosecuted the shooting of the bus of Mr.
Lil Wayne.
Carter. So he knows more about this case than anybody else probably. Why did he leave? Those are questions that are just go show the strength of the case. And you wanted to talk about Lucci, right? Lucci.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, we've got a little bit of a template as to what the end of this could look like. I mean, this is another high-profile RICO trial. The alleged rival gang of YSL, YFN, and YFN Lucci on January 23rd just basically, you know, his case came to a conclusion. They had 13 charges, I think, against him, that one of them was murder. So, you know, these are big charges, and he ends up walking away with one count, pleading guilty to one count of basically being involved in a gang.
Correct.
So
not
the
RICO count, not the felony murder, none of the very serious charges he was accused of. And right. I'm glad he's going to get to go home soon. And I'm happy he got a great deal. And it seems like a very reasonable deal.
And that deal is mostly time served, right? And he's probably going to be in jail for another 3 months or so, right?
Give or take. Bearing in mind, I mean, he's a first offender. He's never been convicted of a crime before.
Yeah.
Just like Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams has no felony convictions. I prosecuted him for a felony, but he completed first offender, so he's not a felon.
Wow, that's interesting. You were on the other side.
A long time ago, yes.
Wow. Oh, I knew you worked for the DA's office. I didn't realize you were that intimately involved with the Young Thug case. That's incredible.
I was in the gang unit. I was investigating this case. The DA's office, when I came into the case, when I was appointed this and I put in my entry, they filed a motion to get me off the case because they said I had a conflict.
You know how the sausage is made.
Yeah. My response was, what is it that I know? What do I know? What do I have in my mind from 10 years ago that I remember that you were not planning to disclose in discovery? There is nothing I know that you should not be giving out in discovery. Eventually, I guess they came off of it and they gave me permission to be in the case. But there seems to be a lot of stuff they want to hide. They don't want the cameras in there. They don't want people that have intimate knowledge of the case to be involved. It's concerning. But going back to Mr. Lucci, he had been in jail for years waiting on a trial, COVID or whatever, but still. Then YSL trial came after his indictment and that trial got started. So he's still stuck in jail. And in his case, it's alleged that he was in the car where somebody died because it was a drive-by shooting, was retaliatory or self-defense or whatever, but somebody died and he was physically in the car and he didn't pull the trigger, but party to a crime puts him on the scene and makes him a member of the gang or whatever. And the offer they gave him is very reasonable. Somebody died, so you're going to serve some years in prison. I think, what was it, 20 to 10, but they are asking the parole to let him out once he's done a third of his sentence, which he's already done most of it. Very reasonable resolution. As far as I know, Mr. Williams, I don't know, I'm not his attorney, but as far as I know, they haven't even given him an offer. They haven't even say, when you plead 20 to RICO, what they have not extended an offer, definitely not a reasonable offer for him to consider and weigh it. I didn't do what they say they did, but it might be in my best interest to take this deal and go away for a couple years because I'd rather do that than risking going to trial and being convicted for 20 plus 20 plus 20 for all the charges he has. So even though it's the same office, it is the exact same office as prosecuting him. It is the district attorney, Fonnie Willis, in charge of both prosecutions. It seems like the line prosecutors in the Lucci case were a lot more reasonable.
I mean, what's behind that, do you think? And does Do you think that the resolution of the YFN trial signals anything about the evidence they had? I mean, are there any parallels, do you think, between YSL and YFN? Like, it seems like they got to the, you know, they got to the finish line with YFN and they were like, maybe we don't have what we think we have, and maybe it'd be safer for us to make a deal. I'm just saying, as an observer who has very little legal knowledge, just been watching this, learning with these guys, it's hard not to draw those conclusions.
That's one possibility, or also the possibility that when you're a prosecutor, and when you become a prosecutor, and you go down to PAC, and you get trained, and you do all that, you got to put your right hand up, and you swear an oath, and you say that one of the things you swear to is that you will be a steward of taxpayers' dollars, because you're not working for a big law firm that has billables. You are doing your job with the public's money, and you have to use that money in best ways you can. That's why you have the tremendous power of prosecutorial discretion. That's why you don't offer the maximum and take to trial every single possession of marijuana, because it's a waste of resources. You want to focus on crimes that involve victims, people that are hurt. In this case, there's people that are hurt, right? But you want to do that in a way that takes in consideration all the other thousands of cases that your office has. So do you want to shut down a courtroom for 2 years, a year and a half so far, because of these six people that you really, really, really want to get? Or do you want to be reasonable and say, you know what, guys, we think we can prove it, but we don't want to waste resources, and this is an offer that is too good for you to say no to. Although I do believe that they don't have the evidence to convict Mr. Williams, they do have evidence that hurts the co-defendants, and that's why they want to keep them together. That's why they fought so hard to object to severances, because the evidence against other people that is pretty solid will get, by association, a guilt to Mr. Williams. And other young men that like, I think, Little Rod's already serving life without parole. Why is he there? That young man made a mistake when he was a child, before his brain was fully developed. A jury determined that he made a mistake and that he needs to pay by dying in prison. Why is he there? Why are you putting him through this? Because life in prison is a lot easier than life at Rice Street. I'll tell you that. Mr. Dorsey wanted to go back to prison, and many times he said, you know what, let's just take it, whatever, because I can't do anything else to him. He's going to die in prison anyway. Just get me out of here. Let me go back to the system. But luckily, he trusted me, and I said, let's just keep fighting. Let's just keep fighting, and eventually we got the result we were looking for. But people would rather be in prison than in Rice Street.
This idea of jail as punishment is, I mean, it's unconstitutional, like, flatly. But how do you get from there to a federal judge who says that you can't do this? I don't even know.
Political will, because who wants to stand up for a bunch of accused criminals?
Right. The thing with the YFN case, like, there were a dozen co-defendants for Rayshon Bennett Lucci, one of whom was sent back to prison, like, they just dropped the charges, and it was after a big fight over discovery. Another one ended up taking a 10-year deal. Like, I mean, go to prison 10 years. Like, a very serious deal. Like, this is, that's a difficult term to serve. Like, that was not a sweetheart deal. And so the idea that there's this range from, yeah, we'll just drop the charges, to 10 years speaks to, like, whatever it took, whatever they think they could get in order to end that trial. Because there was a lot of information in that trial that I still want to understand better. Like, the other half of all of the shootings that we're talking about in the YSL case are in the YFN trial. Mm-hmm. Like, who was shooting at who? Like, who was getting shot at? For example, Shannon Stillwell was shot at, like, in an incident where one of the people in the car was killed. Like, there was details there that I would have wanted to know that I'm not going to get from the other side, where there's a defense attorney who's probing and pulling information and explaining in more detail. And, like, that's just not going to happen. Intensely frustrating. And it seems to revolve around discovery. What I'm hearing from other attorneys in other cases is that the district attorney's office has made a habit of dumping terabytes of discovery at the last possible moment on defendants from all sorts of different cases, and then telling their attorney, like, all right, now we will try it. Let's talk dealing now. Now that you see all of this stuff and you're realizing how many hours it's going to take to get through the discovery, like, yeah, go ahead, take some time. Or they'll finally turn over the discovery and then go, you know, we don't have it. And they'll drop the case, even though the fellow's been sitting in Rice Street for 18 months, where that was the punishment that they were able to extract. Mm-hmm. None of this stuff shows up in an appeals court.
Never.
Because it's never, either a deal is taken or charges are dropped. And so there's nothing to appeal. So how do we, like, if this is misconduct, how did we get at it?
You don't. All these prosecutors have prosecutorial immunity. Like, they have, you can't do anything to them. You can't sue them. Even the worst thing that can happen to them is their conviction gets overturned and now there's a blemish on their conviction record. They're never going to sit a day in a jail for any whatever they did that was improper or pay anybody any money. They still get their paycheck. So nothing, absolutely nothing happens to prosecutorial misconduct, nothing that I've seen. That should change, but I don't think it's ever going to change. And to contrast that, in the YFN case with Mr. Bennett, there was a range. Some people got charges dropped. Some people got 10 years prison. Some people, I mean, Mr. Bennett's sentence is a 10-year prison sentence. He's just eligible for parole. Every single person that has resolved a YSL case got the grave punishment for the horrible things they did for putting Atlanta as in a horrible situation for years. They got probation. Probation. That's what you get when you have a DUI. That's what you get when you do shoplifting.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you feel like is important to point out as you're taking this all in?
I think there is a need for the legislature and the judges. The judges have power to break up these ridiculous long multi-codefendant prosecutions that do not work. Let's go back to the insurrection. People tried to take over the Capitol back in January 6th, and the feds have done an amazing job holding people accountable for what they did one by one by one without wasting the people's money and time, without having jurors sit there for months or years. There's better ways to prosecute cases, and just wanting to put a notch in your belt because you had the biggest, longest running trial is not proper. The judges should sever them. Anytime somebody comes up with, we have 60-some co-defendants that were hanging out at a forest, let's have 60 trials then. You want to do this? Let's do it one by one. Let's stop this nonsense where it puts pressure on people to cooperate or to turn state or to take a deal that is probably not a great deal just to avoid being in a trial for months. Because even if you're not in jail, jail is a big factor, but let's talk about the MAGA case. Some of those people took deals because they can't afford an attorney. I mean, Mr. Trump is not out there paying for their legal bills. I mean, I think Mr. Giuliani, what does he got, like $300 in the bank account? It costs money to have an attorney sit with you there nonstop. And some people can't afford it, and that is not fair. That's not just. These people are presumed innocent, and they should have a trial that's a reasonable trial without the waste of resources. That's how I feel.
Well, thank you so much. That was a great, great note to end on. We are on video now. If you're watching this on YouTube, you already know that. But if you're listening to this as a podcast, know that you can find us on YouTube on the iHeart YouTube channel.
Don't do this.
So check that out. And we'll be back with more guests. We're posting every other Wednesday, and we'll be back in another 2 weeks.
King Slime is a production of iHeart Podcasts and Heirloom Media.
It's written and produced by George Chidi, Christina Lee, and Tommy Andres.
Mixing, sound design, and original music by Evan Tyer and Taylor Chacoin.
The executive producer and editor is Tommy Andres.
Our theme music is by Dunn Deal. Special thanks to Carl Cadle.
For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.